Ron and Annie. And
there are times I do give out phone quotes. It's not often, but, you know, A, I'm trying to help somebody, and B, it's just, yeah, it's just kind of a practical question. Tell me, how, you know, how much is it to do this engine? Give me a ballpark.
It would sure do me good. Do you good? Let me help.
The car doctor.
From what you're telling me, I'm not gonna beat around the bush. From what you're telling me, Ray, it sounds like you were overcharged. Something doesn't make sense.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Annie, the car doctor, here at 855-560-9900. Here to take your calls and solve your problems, whatever they might be, as we motor on down the road. I'm accompanied this hour by Lucy the Wonder Dog. Let me look down there. She's in studio with me today. She's sleeping on the floor, so obviously I've had my impact on the audience already. And Mikey's on the other side of the glass with Big Tom Ray, executive producer. And they're both waiting for your calls at 855-560-9900.
Yeah, give us a call because we're sleeping too.
Well, you could be. Are you done now? Okay, good. So anything else, Tom, you want to say and include? By the way, I loved your, and Steve in Mississippi, we're coming. I loved your comment in the middle of the hour, you know, we just came in from our second hour, about the connected car. You know, we were talking about connected cars in the last hour and how the car companies are gathering data.
Right.
And Tom had an answer for him. I'm not telling him nothing.
Well, exactly. I mean, all three of our cars have the ability to do that through the Bluetooth on the cell phone to send data to Ford. It's like, I go to Ron and Annie, and why do I need to have Ford tell me when I need something?
Well, you know, and that's part of it, Tom, but I think the bigger factor is that we're so bombarded by information. I can't pick up my cell phone anymore without, you know, let me see. Facebook sends me a notice. Google sends me a notice. Fox News sends me a notice. Twitter sends me a notice. Instagram sends me a notice. I get notice of my emails. I just want to make a phone call.
Yeah, exactly. Don't you love it?
And there's no way to turn any of that off.
And you can't really make the phone call because a telemarketer's calling you now.
Right. So I can't use the device that I'm paying for. And I'm at that point where I can imagine how this is going to intrude on the automobile. I really envision the day where, and I think it's here already, that I'm waiting for the repair order to come in, the ticket on my rack, that says diagnose heated cup holder not working. You know, because we're just so involved, or, you know, I don't get my Google updates anymore, or, you know, the amount of, it's a car, it's got to go from A to B. And, you know, when the kids were young, when we were, you know, the immediate family was in the house, we went on vacation every year. And I'm sorry, Steve, once actually we get Steve back, I'm sorry. So we'd go on vacation every year, and we'd go up to Cape Cod, and we'd go up to the far end of Cape Cod, right? We'd go out to Truro and Eastham, and, you know, way out on the end of the Cape. And it's remote. There's not a lot of anything out there, you know, except people and cars. And I remember the one night my oldest, when she was very young, was very sick. She had a cold, or she had a fever of some kind. And this is, my gosh, this is 30 years ago. And I had to go to find the nearest drugstore. The nearest drugstore was in Provincetown. It was a good hour's ride away. And you're driving through the back roads of Cape Cod in the dark. There's no streetlights on Cape Cod. I don't know if it's they pull in the sidewalks after 6:30, okay? And you're driving through the back roads of Cape Cod, just, you know, where's the drugstore, and you know, down in Provincetown and all the way at the end. And, you know, and I think about that when I think about all this connected car nonsense, because, you know, how will they do that? How will they reach that connected car in the remote part of the country? I was up there 2 months ago on vacation, a month ago on vacation, and I couldn't make sense of it, but my cell phone kept going dead. I'd burn through a battery in three quarters of a day, whereas normally I'd get 2 days out of a battery. And I realized I turned off the location device. so that my cell phone couldn't find me. And that lengthened the life of the battery. And I said, what it is, as I'm driving around in the car, I'm changing position so fast, the phone can't find the tower. So it's constantly searching for tower connection to connect the phone. So Google, Fox News, Spotify, Instagram, Twitter, my mail, and everything else can tell me where I am and what traffic jam I'm sitting in the car and all the other nonsense. So in order to get my phone to do what I want it to do, I now have to turn off the locator, which is dangerous because, God forbid, somebody had to find me in an accident. So the whole thing is ludicrous. I think it should be and trust me. Trust me when I tell you, cars do the same thing. And at the bottom of this, the criminal at the bottom of the barrel, it's all about money. It's advertising and bringing vendors or customers to bear to, you know, to say, hey, I can give Joe Smith Chevrolet, you know, 50 new customers a day by tying it into their car through their car through their phone. So connected cars are... There's going to be an invasion of privacy conversation, and I think it's already happening from some of what people are telling me, and I think it's only going to get bigger in time. So, but, yeah, to be continued. Steve in Mississippi, thanks for putting up with me there, Steve. I appreciate it. How can I help you today, sir?
Yes. Hey, I got a 2003 Honda CR-V.
Okay.
It's 212,000 miles on it.
Just broken
in. It's
in
good condition.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I got a Autel Mexicom on it right now with live data.
Okay.
And it keeps popping up a 505 code. I've had a couple of mechanics. I've tried to fix it.
Right.
I've changed the idle air control valves. The only thing I haven't changed, there's a couple of things. The throttle body, which one of the shops recommended. I bought a China aftermarket one and put that on. And right now, the short-term fuel trim, it's like 1.01, and the limits on my Autel is 1.0 to 1. And so that's telling me I have a... what I believe is some type of vacuum leak, but I can't find it.
Well, let's...
And I was just wondering what... tell me what you think I should...
Yeah, wait a minute now. You're looking at fuel trim, and it's what, Stevie?
On the Autel meter, it's a Maxicom. It goes 0 to 1, and mine's 1.01.
Okay. So are you reading year, make, model? Oh,
yes.
Know what? You know what you're looking at? You're looking at the air fuel ratio reading, aren't you?
It says air fuel FBST fuel trim. So is that what I'm looking at?
You're looking at air. I think you're looking at air fuel feedback sensor fuel trim.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, you're looking at the signal being generated by the sensor, which will drive the PCM to modify fuel trim. So
okay.
you got it right in front of you. Can you find fuel trim?
Yeah,
is there something there that says SFT?
FFT?
SFT, short-term. I'm sorry, STF, short-term fuel trim, or STFT. Is there something there that specifically just says fuel trim by itself? And then, you know, there should be one long-term fuel trim and short-term fuel trim.
Yeah. I don't know how...
Okay, so do this. Are you into that? Are you in that tool? Is that tool year, make, model, or OBD2 specific?
It does have year, make, and model.
Okay, what are you in right
time,
now?
You know, it's.
Are you looking at it now using Honda specific software? You're into it.
Yes.
So get out of that. Have you used this tool before, Stevie?
I've used it a little bit.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't have that much use for it. But
all right. So here's the problem, all right? And God bless you for trying, all right, brother? So hey, listen, man, it takes guts to do this, right? You're trying to fix something broken with a tool you're not familiar with using a system you haven't had experience on, all right?
Correct.
So let's make this simple. OBD2. Go into it, you know, turn the tool off, reboot it. There should be a section there where you can go in under OBD2 protocol, all right? OBD2 is the standardized emission control testing that the government mandated as part of the Clean Air Act back in 96, all right, that it said all vehicles manufactured 96 and up are going to have OBD2 diagnostics. Everything is standard. So when you plug into any OBD2 port, you go into OBD2 data. Every car from a Mercedes to a Nissan to a Chevrolet to a Honda, anything sold in the United States, a Porsche, it's all going to look the same. And, you know, vehicle manufacturers will get different. Chrysler uses a different expression for fuel trim than GM, than Ford, and so on and so forth. Use OBD2. Go find fuel trim. See where the fuel trim is. All right? And then we can talk. Then we can talk next week. If you find that you got 46 minutes this hour, you can call me back. Now, before I let you go, a P0505, and before you get out of year make model on this, go into special functions. See if that vehicle has an idle relearn. See if there is a throttle angle reset, and any type of, do they reference any sort of throttle relearn? It was 03, 04, 05 when Honda first started doing this. Is this drive-by-wire, or does this have a cable?
It has a cable.
It has a cable, so it won't have relearn then.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have relearn. The drive-by-wires had relearn, all right?
Well, there actually were procedures there for relearn, but...
not throttle.
People I've talked to say that they basically just relearn by driving it.
Right,
At this point, maybe I should try that.
Well, you could... I don't think it'll matter because it has a cable. My experience has been if it has a cable, relearns don't matter. It only matters on the drive-by-wire cars. All right? Do this. Look at fuel trim. Is it out of range? Look at idle air control counts. It'll be listed as IAC. If IAC is at zero and the vehicle is at idle, then yes, I think you have a vacuum leak somewhere. All right.
Okay.
You know, that's number one, number two. And then last, I'll take a question one sec. And then last.
Sure.
Does the idle air control valve have coolant around it? Is it the type that's heated by coolant?
Yeah, it does. It does.
Okay. And is it hot on both sides? Is it warm on both sides?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay, because those hoses get clogged over time and they won't flow coolant, and then affects idle air control operation. Go ahead, you had a question.
Yeah, my question to you was, what do you think about this valve assembly rotor? Are you familiar with that? If you pull the picture up, or it's a big thing that rotates and lets the air in and out. Is there any chance that could be getting carboned up or anything, causing some of those problems? Or
well, I thought that's
it's
what
on the intake side.
I thought that's what you changed. I'll tell you what,
no,
Stevie.
No, I did not change.
Stevie,
stay
where you are, babe. Sit right where you are. Give me one second. Let me pull over, take the pause. I don't want to cut this short. Stay where you are. I'll come right back to you. Stephen, Mississippi, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. Don't go anywhere. We're back right after this.
Keep Ron's number handy, 855-560-9900, for when you really need advice on your car. Here's Ron.
Hey, Stevie, you still there, Stephen, Mississippi?
Yeah, I'm still here.
03 Honda CRV. Thanks, babe. I appreciate you waiting with us. You know, I didn't ask you the most basic question. Is the idle speed high on this car?
Well, no, it's like 800 RPMs right now with the ACs running.
Okay. That's almost on the fudge factor of high, just so you know. They get very particular, all right? As a matter of fact, the next generation with drive-by-wire, when there's no throttle cable, will set this 505 code on the difference of 50 RPM. So they get really fussy. One thing before we go on, I just want to mention it. Have you looked at the throttle stop screw on the side of the throttle body?
No, not really.
So just look at the throttle stop screw. Is there a gap between the end of the screw and the tang of the plate? You ever work on a car with a carburetor,
well,
Stevie?
Yeah, I have.
Okay,
I have.
So you know what I mean. You kind of sound like
yeah.
Mike. You know what I'm talking about with a base idle screw, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
so,
I know what you're talking about. So I think it's all the way back, to be honest with you.
What's all the way back?
Here's a real quick. I could put a Chinese throttle body because of the cost, and thinking it was that was the problem. Now they say a mechanic told me to get a Honda, which is $1,000. Do you think that could be my problem, or does I just start throwing parts at it?
Yeah, we're starting to throw parts at it. I'd rather diagnose it. I'd rather put the original one back on, and diagnose it. I'm a diagnose guy. So
yeah, I agree.
You know, I want to know. is the base idle screw. Well, here, do this. Put it back together with the original Honda piece and take the air intake boot off. This isn't a mass airflow car, right? This is a MAP car. Yes, this is a MAP car. The MAP sensor's on top of the throttle bar.
It's a MAP, and I just changed that out because it was so cheap.
Well,
and I said, well, maybe it could be doing it.
So let's put it all back to original, okay?
Okay.
And so do you know what an idle air control valve is?
Yeah, I know it's it lets adjust the amount of airflow in for idle.
Right.
There's three wires to it.
It's a bypass around the throttle plate. They're just, you know, it's sort of like if your wife said, hey, open the front door, it's hot in here, and you open the front door, you're letting the air bypass the windows and come in the front door. Same idea.
Right.
So with the engine running at idle, warmed up, okay, you should be able to take your finger or something and block off the idle port, all right?
And I've done that before, and it slows down.
Does it slow down? Does it stall?
I've also taken it I've taken a piece of cardboard and put it up, and it stalls right away. Yes.
Okay, so maybe you're not getting a good seal. When here's why mechanics wear rubber gloves. Rubber gloves, and you put your index finger on that port, boy, that thing will suck right in, and you know you've got a good seal. So you could try that. Now, if it doesn't stall, you know, with a good seal there, all right, even though you said deal with cardboard, just do it again. Do it again with, you know, the same parts. Let's go back and be scientific, step one, step two. You know, either we've got a vacuum leak or we could have a bad PCV valve. All right? Or did somebody change the PCV valve? Is this PCV valve?
I changed that.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did I know you were going to do that, Stevie? You got to stop changing. You got to stop changing things. We got to diagnose.
Well, I know, but at this point, I'm so frustrated. It's been 9 months working on it and kicked back from a couple car shops. You know.
Yeah, I understand. Drive to New Jersey. You know, listen, I've had my battles over the years. It's there's always a reason why a car runs wrong. There really is, and.
Right.
You know, I want to get down to the root cause of it. And you feel so silly because when you find out, I remember we had a Chrysler. God, it's got to be 25 years ago. You always forget the hard ones, right? We had a Chrysler 25 years ago. It would start, stall when it was cold, and then run normal the rest of the day. And it had to go through a 4 to 6 hour cool down before it would act up again. And what it turned out to be was, and we talked to everybody, we diagnosed, we threw everything we had at this car, and I'm sitting there, I thought about it, I said, it's so basic. What if I open the throttle plate a little bit more? And I did it, and I just touched my foot to the pedal, and the car idled every time. I went out, I looked at the throttle stop screw. One of the three shops before us had backed off the throttle stop screw and never reset it properly. I tweaked it up just a touch. The car ran perfect the rest of its life. So there's always a bottom line answer. Take a look at the throttle stop screw, Stevie. Take a look at, if you close off the IAC, take a look at the coolant flow to the IAC valve. Try and read what you can about the intake air bypass. That's also in there, too, that feeds air to the injectors. And then call me back next week and we can talk about it. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Back. We're on the name of the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Should point out that is the Car Doctor's 24/7 number. If you are new to the Car Doctor family, thanks for tuning in. And I know we've got a list of affiliates this week. Tom is going to make some serious welcomes next week as we can't keep up with the growing demand. I think we picked up 14 or 15 or something. See, that star with the wrench for Halloween costume really looks good. You know, it's that's, you know, and it's funny. I'll tell you a quick story. Sam in Illinois. Let me do Sam in Illinois, and then I'll tell you the quick. It's a funny story about me and a state trooper this week. That's kind of, oh boy. Sam, Illinois. Yes, sir. 89 Toyota MR2. How can I help?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir. What's going on?
The problem I'm having is this car does not get driven. It's my
Sunday car.
It just hasn't got driven yet. I mean, I've had it for a while, and I took it off the thing for my plates and everything for about a year because I got other cars. So, but I'm trying to find a buyer, but I still can't find anybody.
Okay.
But what's I run it every month, no matter what. Run it meaning I start it. I don't drive it.
Right.
I'm having a problem there's three problems. One is at 1,500 RPMs now, the idle is fluctuating. That's one problem. The second problem is at 4,200 RPMs, the check engine light pops on, and at 5,000, it goes off.
Okay.
And that's two, right?
That's
the
two.
Third one, I think that's it. Yeah, the third one is
you really want to keep the car, but your wife won't let you. Tell the truth.
Well,
come on,
I can't drive this thing in the winter. That's my problem. You know,
well, you got to move to a warm state. You got to move where the climate isn't so bad.
I know. You got that right.
Yeah, it would solve a lot of your problems. Listen, there's nothing like having a hot rod. Danny, my mechanic, and his long-term girlfriend of 6 years recently took a pause, right? And the poor guy is like all terminally, you know, he's not thrilled with life lately. So I took the hot rod to work about 2 weeks ago. And I said, listen, the oil needs to be changed on the hot rod and rotate the tires for me, would you, kid? And he rotates the tires, changes the oil. And it's customary in the shop, you know, you work on the car, you drive the car afterwards. So he looks at me because he knows what's coming. You know, like, oh, my God, Ron's going to let me drive. Ron doesn't let anybody drive the hot rod, right? So I threw him the keys and I said, here, don't kill yourself, right? You had to hear him going around the block. He was so petrified to death, open headers, black 55 Chevy, making all kinds of He pulls back into the – he pulled back into the shop about 3 minutes later, grinning ear to ear. And I said to him, how's your ex-girlfriend doing? He goes, who? See? And I said, you know, it clears your head right out. You know, who? You know, there's nothing like a hot rod. It's just, so you got to drive the MR2, baby. It's just, it's cool, right? They were a cool car. They were very ahead of their time.
They were.
They really were.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm 6 foot tall and I can fit comfortably and just go cross country very easily.
Right.
And smooth. I mean, it's very cool.
So everybody needs a hot rod. I've come to that conclusion. The country would be a better place if more kids were working on big block Chevelles in the corner parking lot of Dairy Queen on Friday night than the current crop of gangbangers and everything else we got going on. So
let me tell you, the best part of this car, it's automatic, okay?
Well, yeah.
That's why I bought it.
Yeah. Hey, listen.
But it's a smooth car, you know, just cruising.
Well, some of the fastest hot rods are automatics, trust me. You can't. Somebody taught me a long time ago, you can't outshift an automatic. So what's wrong with this car? Well, so the thing I would want to know is, if you have the ability to pull codes on this, you know, what fault code is there? And I'm going to take a bet and go out on a limb and think that there's going to be a code 6 in this car. Because what you're describing to me are the classic symptoms of what these cars went through with distributor issues. And a lot. You're going to tell me you put a distributor in it, right?
A while back, yes,
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, yeah,
I did.
Aftermarket or no?
I bought a used one because I couldn't find a.
Right.
I couldn't find a. A refurbished or a new one.
Right, and that's part of the problem. There's two signals involved here. There's a signal out of the igniter, all right, that goes to the PCM that tells it, hey, here's what I'm at. And then there's a signal from the distributor to the ECM. So, you know, we have a signal from module and a signal from the distributor, and the ECM compares those and says, is everybody on board and is everybody telling me the truth? And then it does what it wants to do with timing appropriately. So they actually monitor it in two places. I mean, can you imagine this? Look at how archaic this is, right? You know, this is today. Well, today there's a processor that does this, you know, a bazillion times in the amount of time it took me to explain it to you. So the bigger problem with this, all right, igniters were bad on these cars. I remember igniters failing all the time. Every time we'd scope it, we'd see a bad signal out of the igniter. But there was also issues out of the wiring harness between the ECM and the distributor. They were oil-soaked. Okay. They got dry. They got brittle. They cracked. They, you know, and a lot of distributors got replaced for bad wiring harnesses. So step one. Well, step two. Step two is you got to scan them for codes. Step one is you go home tonight and you tell your wife we're moving to Florida. And when she says why, you say, because I want to drive my MR2. And when she says just drive it, Just build another garage and buy another car. You got her, brother. It'll be great. All right? And then if that doesn't work, see step two. Get the codes and then start. If it is a code six distributor and stuff, we can start looking at all this nonsense. Yeah. But think about the wiring harness. The wiring harness.
Yeah.
It's probably oil-soaked by now and brittle as and brittle as hell. All right?
Right. All right.
Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, kiddo.
All
take good care. There's nothing. I'm telling you, Danny was so normal the rest of the week. He was just, grinning ear to ear. And he said, and he was like this. He comes over. He goes, smell my T-shirt. I go, why? He goes, it smells like exhaust. Isn't that great? You know, it's like an aphrodisiac. It's like, not to me, but I mean to a car guy. It's like, I smell like a car now. Oh, my God, the way it was. How did I survive? Anyway, 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's cruising back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, at your service. Let's go over to Frank in New Mexico. Frank, how's things out in New Mexico way today?
Got a big rain yesterday, 0.75 inches, which is a lot for us.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot for you.
Well, we're drying out.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask you, I obtained this 7148 propane enrichment tool,
right.
And I've got my little brake line stuck in there, you know, with the pins down to the opening of two paperclip wires.
Yeah.
Peened in the shape of an eye. And as far as using it, I'm wondering, should I turn that main propane valve all the way on, a little bit on?
No, what I do is, if I'm sniffing around and I'm looking for a vacuum leak, I'll start small. So, I may turn that the black knob, an eighth of a turn, just crack it off of, if we're looking at the face of a clock, just crack it like an hour and a half open. And then the button on the top is the go, no go, right? That's the flow. So that's, that's maximum wide open. There's no way to adjust that. There's no regulation there. So the black is your fine tune. So I hold the top brass button down and I slowly open and close the black trying to find my flow. Now, the issue becomes, and you can turn it all the way open and listen to it. You'll hear how much comes out. It doesn't take much. Propane's very precise. And, as you get to use it, you'll get more comfortable with it. One thing, to realize is if you were trying to get a car to run on propane because you're lazy like Ron and you don't like pushing cars, you're going to crank that black valve wide open flow. You're trying to get as much volume of fuel into the duct, into the engine as possible. I know your Oldsmobile is carbureted and it's not necessarily affected by that.
I've been experimenting with it and getting it to where just a little puff comes out,
Right, right.
Each time I hit that button, but I just didn't want to go overboard if that was possible.
No, I don't know if it's possible to go overboard because the worst that happens is the car stalls.
Yeah, okay.
Right. It's think of it as if it was smoke that you were letting out of that wand, all right? And you were smoking the intake to look to see where the smoke got sucked in, for lack of a better way to put it. How much smoke do you want coming out the end of that brake line? And that's sort of how you're looking at it. All right, it's just another fuel source. It's wherever there's a vacuum leak, it's going to draw it in. Now on a carbureted car, it's a little primitive via scan tool, because if you were watching this on a scan tool, it's such a slow processor that you won't see a real fast reaction rate. What I would do is I would go down to the oxygen sensor, and you've probably only got one on the driver's side, I'm going to guess. There's probably a purple or green wire leading down to the O2, and the black wire of the other side of that is just a single black wire going down to the sensor. I would tap into the body harness, into the main vehicle harness there, and put a voltmeter on it, 0 to 1 volt. You ever play with an O2 sensor, Frank, to see how it works?
Once, long time ago.
Okay.
I think I know what you're talking about there.
Well,
an
oxygen sensor is like a thermostat, right?
Yeah.
It's a voltage-producing device that, as the voltage goes up, the computer sees the increase in voltage, and it says, hey, the vehicle is running rich, let's cut back on the fuel. And then as it drops down low is lean, it says, hey, the vehicle is lean, let's add more fuel to the mixture, and so on. So it's sort of like the thermostat in your house. You set it at 68, the heat comes up, comes up to 68, the furnace shuts down, it, you know, runs, then as it cools off, it brings it back up. It's an on-off cycling type of process. Well, you can look at that signal on a voltmeter, all right, especially on an older, simple car like this. Now, it works really well if you have a real old-school analog voltmeter with a sweeping needle. You know?
Yeah, I do. I got a great big old Simpson.
There you go. How did I know you would have one of those? I actually have one of those too, and I still like using it. But you know, it's high low. Now, for your purposes, you can look to see where it's going. It's going to be very slow, and it's just going to dither a lot and think about it a lot. They weren't really fast and responsive. And the best example of this I can give you is if you want to see a real fast one. Once you get comfortable with it on an old car, hook it up to a newer car. That needle's bouncing so fast, you'll understand why everything went digital. And it's sort of the best example of and the best look of at something digital versus analog. Now, get it on a voltmeter and then feed a little propane to the motor and watch what the O2 sensor does. It's going to be instantaneous that it's going to go rich. And you're going to see a rich condition because that fuel is displacing oxygen. And
great tip. Yeah. The reason I'm going to do this is because a problem developed with the old. It's running like it has a miss. Okay, this happened a couple of years ago. I swore it was electronics, plugs or something. Everything checked out. Couldn't find the miss that I thought it was. Took it to the shop. Half hour shop time later, they said, oh, it was a vacuum leak. Everything else is fine. I neglected to say, where was that leak? Show me. But anyway, it's happening again. All the plugs are firing, but it sounds like it's a miss. So right. I'm going to do the vacuum leak sniffer thing now.
Yeah, check around the base gasket very carefully of the carburetor. They tended to rot and fall away. And a lot of the vacuum lines coming off the back of the intake manifold and any of the vacuum lines anywhere on those had a tendency to collapse inward, so you would only see it while the vehicle is running. But, you know, that's what that tool is good for. And then get in the habit of using that tool on a good car, and you'll see the result, and then you'll understand what it's like when you get a sick car. And then you'll understand when you've got a large vacuum leak on something and it runs really rough and terrible and raggy, how the propane smooths it out. You know that you're looking for a vacuum leak because fuel will fix a vacuum leak. I've never seen fuel fix an ignition miss or a mechanical problem, so you can use it that way too. Keep going, Frank. You're getting there, babe, and keep doing what you're doing. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Michael in Massachusetts. Go, babe. 03 Honda Accord. This is the AC car from last week, right?
Yes, exactly. Yep. Okay. I did everything. Let's see. We took the, I think it was number 30-dash, under-dash fuse, number 12 under the hood. We checked those. They were checked out all right.
Okay.
I tapped the snowflake relay.
No change.
A couple of times, and with it. With the AC on, no change.
Okay.
The only thing I did not do was take a reading of the voltage. I didn't have my mechanic; hadn't seen him in a while, so I could not get the reading on the compressor.
Okay, that's
if I can get a reading on the compressor and it checks out, what anything else it might.
Well, you're looking to see do you have voltage and ground at the compressor, and if you do, you've got a bad clutch coil. You're at that point.
Okay.
All right. That's the last step and probably the most critical step. All right. If you don't have voltage at the compressor, then we've got to backtrace it up, possibly a bad pressure switch or a bad climate control head. Not impossible, but clutch coils are the bigger failure. And generally, at this age and mileage, clutch coils become compressor and clutch coils. How many miles were on this car? I don't recall.
I have... Oh, 150.
How many?
150,000.
Yeah, so it's, you know, the issue is to take it apart and just do a compressor clutch, you know, it's got a fair amount of miles on it, and the price difference is going to be such to justify the labor that it probably pays just to put a good compressor assembly in it and be done with it, if that's what it turns out to be. So have your mechanic check for voltage at the compressor clutch coil. You know, you should be able to turn it on and off if he has any doubt. Here's an example where let's put a, remember old school round style headlights?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's use a round style headlight. That's about, that'll require about 7 amp load on the circuit. If the AC control can turn on that headlight in place of the compressor clutch, we now know the circuit will support electrical current. It'll support the load. and that you've got a bad compressor. We're using the headlight as a load substitute, so we can try it that way, or we can just do it with a voltmeter. The headlight's a nice touch, though, that you may want to do, because it will put load and duplicate load on the system. Try that this week. Call me back next, and we can kind of take it from there. But I think you're getting closer, Michael. Good job. Hey, another hour just flew by. Till the next time, I'm Ron Anani, the Car Doctor, reminding each and every one of you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.